Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show. That's anywhere, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We have a special guest today joining us. That's Shane Reardon from 670 The Score here in Chicago to jump into Bulls conversation with us for the next half hour or so. We've got tons to talk about and many wins streak for the Bulls. But first and foremost, Matt, Shane, what's up, guys? How are you?
Doing all right, Shane. Glad to have you on board for today's episode.
God, thanks for having me. But let me clear something up real quick. I thought this was a podcast on the South Florida Bulls.
Ooh. Well, then we're going to have ourselves an interesting conversation, I guess.
I'm not ready for the Chicago Bulls. I was ready to talk South Florida.
Well, over that 10-game win streak, it kind of looked like a mid-major team playing basketball in the NBA for that point. But what was kind of surprising, and I think a lot of Bulls fans going into this weekend, we're surprised by the all of a sudden turnaround in being able to close out games, which is what Matt and I spent the majority of Friday's episode and even into Thursday. We talked about it when they blew that huge lead against the Pacers and talked about the inability to close out games during this losing streak. And now they turn around and close out two tightly contested games, one against the Hornets in overtime, 119-111, and also against the Knicks, 104-102 win. So that puts the Bulls cutting their win streak at 10, putting them on a two-game winning streak. So just from this weekend, what was your guys' initial reaction to all of this, and including Nico's return?
Well, look, to me, I think it was another example of small, like specific moments that happen late in these games that point towards the budding optimism that should have Bulls fans excited about the pieces they got in this Jimmy Butler trade. And of course, while we wait for LaVine and his return, that is of course Markkanen and Chris Dunn. To me, Markkanen and Dunn both had, I mean, Markkanen had an off night shooting against the Knicks, but he was dynamite against the Hornets, 24-12 for another double double. And he hit a clutch shot late in that game. You talk about the ability to close out. And then Chris Dunn followed up 20-12 against the Hornets with another impressive game against the Knicks, dropping 17 points. And most importantly, having his number called from Hoiberg in that late game situation shows his ability to put on the Jets, get to the bucket, draw a foul, and hit those clutch free throws in the final seconds of that game to ice the victory over the Knicks. Those are your two key pieces you're watching for this rebuild right now. They both had big games and big moments in closing seconds of these two wins. To me, that's the biggest takeaway.
So it's kind of like the finish against the Knicks was the exact polar opposite of the finish against the Pacers the other night, which was just brutally disgusting. Up 17, you lose a 17-point lead, and Markkanen can't hit that shot. I think it was Markkanen, right? I'm having a hard time going
right at the buzzer,
that far
yeah.
back. Yeah, Markkanen couldn't hit the shot at the buzzer. But it is fun to watch them compete and to be in these games, and it was fun to watch them actually close out the last two, but I'm going to go with the larger sample size as opposed to the what have you done for me lately. And it's just, it's not encouraging. Or am I just looking at a very small amount of guys who are even going to be here in 3 or 4 years?
No, I think you're spot on with that, because In the short sample size, these two week games of the weekend, it was nice to see that turnaround. And that's something that Matt and I had talked about when talking about a preview of the Charlotte game and about the New York Knicks game. It's like, what is their turnaround going to be from being embarrassed in Indianapolis on Wednesday night? Like, when they clearly should have came out of that game with a win, and everything fell apart for them. And that was kind of something that continuously happened over that 10 game losing streak. And it was nice to see them bounce back. But I think the larger point you made there is, I think fans are getting a little bit too upset with the fact that this team looks so bad. And my thing with people is, you know, you got to take a step back and look at who's really going to be on this roster 3-4 years down the line, when you're hoping that the Bulls turn it around and they're at that point where they can start contending, you know, for a playoff seed and actually be competitive. And when you look at this roster, I see legitimately 3 or 4 guys that are going to be on this roster. And one of them's not even playing, and the other just came back from an injury. And so Zach LaVine, David Nwaba, and then you add in Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn. Those are the 4 guys I really see hanging around here. I mean, Denzel Valentine too, jury's still kind of out on him, but I think the larger scope of everything is the sample size is small, and I would like to see this continue. And it's good for the Bulls in terms of morale coming back, winning 2 games, 1 at being at home. I think this helps the morale of the young guys. And you know what? The uptick in Chris Dunn's confidence has been amazing. I don't know, over the last 2 weeks, there has been some type of switch that's been turned on for Chris Dunn.
I think you're right, Jordan. And just to, you know, throw some numbers behind that sentiment, Dunn, over his last 7 games, including this little 2-game winning streak, is averaging 17 points, 7.5 assists, 5.3 rebounds, and 2 steals. Still 2.7 turnovers. You don't love that, but it's certainly better than it was early on this season when he was a turnover machine. So he's getting those turnovers down, is showing a lot more confidence, both looking to distribute from that point guard position and looking to score. He's also, in that 7-game stretch, shooting 50%, and remarkably, because this was the biggest weakness that everybody kept knocking him for in the draft in 2016, shooting 52.9% from downtown. Now, that'll probably regress over the course of the season, but he's shooting confidently. He's playing the point guard position confidently. And Shane, to your point of, you know, it's a small sample size, these 2 wins, and overall the product on the floor is still bad every night, you're not wrong. But I think what Bulls fans need to focus on, as Jordan alluded to, is who's sticking around, and the guys that absolutely right now, without a doubt, are sticking around, Markkanen and Dunn, were both key in these 2 wins. I think that's a positive you can take away.
Small thing on Denzel Valentine. I was in the Marianos, and I think it's considered technically like Ravenswood, I think, right off the Damon Brown line.
Yeah.
Weeks ago, I was in there for like an hour eating dinner and drinking or whatever, because the bar is super cheap. And Denzel walked in on an off night, and not a single person approached him within that hour for a picture, for an autograph, nothing. How embarrassing does that have to be for a professional athlete, for an NBA player to not be approached once in his home city? I thought it was hilarious.
That's pretty crazy, considering like Denzel Valentine is very, like, he's very noticeable. Like, if you watch,
because he's super ugly, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that's actually kind of really embarrassing. And for,
especially considering he was famous in college. I mean, you know, like, he was he was the main player on a Sparty team that made some deep tournament runs. And even before he got drafted by the Bulls, he's a guy whose face you would recognize if you are even generally paying attention to the world of basketball.
Right.
So to touch on a little bit more over these 2 games, before we get to Bobby and Nico and how they've been playing together since being back on the floor, the other thing I wanted to talk about too is Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen. And Matt, you alluded to this, but I think it's really interesting that those 2 guys, their strength, especially against the Knicks, were just cooking the Knicks in the first quarter too. And it seems like they all of a sudden have this type of chemistry where they're playing off of each other and they're playing really well. And the one thing that I had brought up over that 10 game losing streak is the fact that the point guards and the guards in general weren't even looking for guys down low, like Bobby Portis and Lauri Markkanen and Robin Lopez. Those guys weren't getting started, and they were collapsing the D. They were bringing the D to the top of the key, and it was getting to the point where there was no open shots for the Bulls to be taking from 3, and taking open effective shots, they weren't doing that. They were just chucking up 3s and hoping and praying that they were going in. And over these 2 games, I've noticed more that Chris Dunn has been looking to facilitate, even though he has had offensive turn on in his last two games. He's been looking for more so for Lauri Markkanen in ways he can facilitate this offense. And I think that's a step up for Chris Dunn. And maybe it's just alluding to his confidence level. Now that he's kind of in his system and he feels comfortable with guys on the floor and he's feeling comfortable with his game, I think this is a major uptick in what we thought we were getting at the beginning of the season from Chris Dunn. And that consistency level too, that consistency level we talked about at the beginning of the season when he would have one really good game and then the next night he didn't even look like he belonged on an NBA floor. It's now looking more and more like Chris Dunn has gotten confident, he's gotten relaxed, and he's understanding what his role on this team is. And he's even stepped up to the point where he told Sam Smith after the Knicks game that he wants to be this first guy on this opportunity to close out games. He wants to be considered that closer. And for the longest time here in the first 25 games of the season, the Bulls don't have that. And we talked about that a lot, is the Bulls didn't have a closer, a guy that they could rely on to score down late and to be effective. And Chris Dunn wants to be that guy. And I think Zach LaVine's still going to be that guy when he comes back. But it's nice to have multiple guys like that.
What about you, Shane? Are you on the Chris Dunn hype train or not quite yet?
I mean, my worry is that he doesn't have somebody to instill the confidence in him on the outside. So my question to you guys is, do you think this is Chris Dunn sourced confidence on his own, or do you think that, like, Fred can't do it, is what I'm saying. These young guys need some kind of leadership in there to let them know they're doing the right things. And if it's me, I don't believe a word Fred says. And it's not like Robin Lopez is going to be around forever. You need some kind of anchored leadership, especially in a coach and especially in your front office. And I don't see any of these guys doing it for them. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I think what you're saying is a valid concern, and I think it points to a larger issue that I have, and I think Jordan has as well, which is I'm still not convinced that Fred Hoiberg is A, the guy to lead this Bulls rebuild, or B, even really a competent coach at the NBA level. To me, he still has a lot of issues, both drawing up plays out of timeouts, recognizing mismatches. That's something that Jordan was referencing with the Bulls' struggles early this season to find some of their guys with mismatches on the block. And I mean, he also just, to me, does not seem to instill any confidence or fear or any sort of positive or, like, no emotion whatsoever. Like, to me, Fred is just kind of like,
it's like a sugar cookie without the
sugar. He's the Ned Flanders of the NBA. Like, that's how I view Fred Hoiberg. And look, he's a nice guy. He's the yes man that the front office wanted. But as far as his actual coaching ability and your concerns about molding these young players, and John Paxson continues to harp on the fact that this season is about young player development, while I'm encouraged by the improvements of Chris Dunn over the last couple of weeks, I still don't think that Fred Hoiberg is the guy who can mold your young talent into championship-level contending talent. I don't buy that at all about Fred Hoiberg.
To go back to your question on, like, whether or not I'm on the hype train, I think it's fun to see a point guard out there facilitating good basketball and doing it well. So yes, in terms of Chris Dunn as the basketball player, I'm on the hype train for now.
Yeah, and having to watch Jerry and Grant go out there, especially early on in the season, I was done with that after the first five games. It seems like he's playing better with the second unit anyway. But like you guys had said, and I think it goes back to, you know, just playing devil's advocate for a second here about Fred. Over the course of three seasons, he's been dealt kind of a shit hand in terms of the way that they wanted to construct this team and the way that he was brought into coach. It was like two different philosophies were going here and trying to mesh both of them. It just didn't work. And now that he's in his third season, and now we're completely flipping the script in terms of what the Bulls were doing, and now they're rebuilding, giving Fred that opportunity, I still think there was a lot of resources not given to Fred. You can point to the guard situation over the last, what, three years since he's been here. He hasn't had a legitimate guy that can facilitate an offense. And like, you had Rajon Rondo, but then there was so many problems with him and Fred, and then the locker room too. You just hadn't had somebody that could commit to being that type of leader. And I think that's what it goes back to. As much as Robin Lopez is super important in that locker room as a leader, I think once he's moved, and if the Bulls do move him, then you have to really look around that locker room and figure out who's the next guy to step up and to take on that role. And sort of that's kind of what the Bulls are missing in terms of like missing from Jimmy Butler is that leadership factor and somebody who can play off of those teammates like that. And I keep bringing this factor up, and I think we'll see it more once he gets back on the court. But I honestly think that Zach LaVine can be that guy just from interviews, just from everything that he has done, not on the court. I think that guy's the real deal. And I think his personality is going to match what the Bulls want, what Bulls fans have been longing for a really long time. And maybe I'll be completely flat out wrong about how his play is, but from a personality standpoint and in terms of a guy that you want to cash in on, I think Zach LaVine, at the opportunity he's got, I think he's going to take the keys and hopefully do something special with it.
Yeah, no, look, Ed Jordan, you have a point about Fred not having the right tools, certainly for his first two seasons when it was juggling D. Rose and Jimmy Butler and then Jimmy Butler and Rondo and Wade. That's a fair point. But doesn't it tell you something that you're talking about, all right, who's going to lead this team? Who's going to mold this young talent? And you referenced Robin Lopez, not to knock him. He's a center. He's not going to like teach Chris Dunn how to play point guard better.
Right.
And then you referenced Zach LaVine, a guy who's new to the team and hasn't played yet because he's coming off an ACL. It's not Hoiberg. Hoiberg is not a leader. At least that is my opinion. Maybe you disagree with me. But if you're talking about who's the leader of this team once you trade Robin Lopez, if that happens, and you start talking about other players on the roster and not the head coach, in my opinion, that's a problem.
Having to cut hours and hours of tape from Fred Hoiberg over the last few years and listen to the uninspiring garbage that this man has to say, I don't think that even if he had the right people, that he can be the X factor to take them to the next level. It doesn't matter who you give Fred Hoiberg. He's not going to be the person on any team to instill that kind of confidence like we've been talking about. So it doesn't really matter to me if he's got the right weapons or not. He just doesn't have that intangible to be a leader of men.
I think you guys are making fair points, and I think time will tell, especially once they get LaVine back and see what they do this summer. I think that's going to be really the transition is next season to just kind of see where we are in terms. I think right now, if you're judging Fred Hoiberg on everything he's done up until this point, you guys are all right, and like I agree with that point too. I just think in terms of if you're going to play devil's advocate, you look at the shit hand that he was given in terms of guards. I mean, the Bulls went out and basically got what campaign, Michael Carter Williams, Jerry and Grant, these guys to try and facilitate and spot up in these guard positions. And it just didn't work. And I feel like any great team in the NBA is first and foremost surrounded by a leader, and that usually comes from the guard position. I mean, look around at any other team in the NBA, and you can point out to the first guy that runs their offense, usually their guard, and he's usually their leader too. And the Bulls, that's been absent. That's been absent since Derrick Rose left. That's been absent since Jimmy Butler left.
Well,
so.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about the guard situation here, whether it's the improvement of Chris Dunn or the failures of those who came before him, but I think we're ignoring, and let's get to this now, the fact that the most important player in this Bulls two-game win streak is Nico Mirotic, right? I mean, the Bulls are 2-0 since Nico came back, and he said that and is very proud of that in his post-game comments after the win against the Knicks. Yeah, your thoughts, gentlemen, on the return of Nico Mirotic.
Who would you rather have in the long term? Is it Mirotic? Is it Portis? Is it neither?
I think Portis makes more sense. For the long term,
I'm with Portis too. I think just for money wise, age, and just what the Bulls are trying to do, like a 26-year-old Mirotic that's commanding $12-13 million isn't really ideal for a Bulls team that's historically bad. You look at the Portis contract, you look at his age, you look at his productivity, makes more sense for Portis in terms of long term for the Bulls.
Right, to be like the seventh, eighth, or ninth guy coming off the bench.
Absolutely.
When you believe that the Bulls will be at full strength, whether that's in 2022, 2023, maybe even later, Bobby Portis will be in the back end of his career.
Right. I mean, I see Portis as like an energy guy and a rebounder
changer
off the bench.
So, but here's the larger point, and I know this has been absolutely hammered into the ground. These are two grown men who got in a workplace altercation. It's widely known, I think, at this point that Bobby Portis, although he's the one who connected, was in the right, and Nico was doing the majority of the instigation. Think about it this way. We've talked a lot about this on The Score. Could you go to work with somebody for the rest of your career that punched you in the face? Could you?
Probably not.
I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to, and that's why I'm shocked that these guys are sharing the floor. I did not think that was going to happen. I thought they were going to shut Nico down until they, you know, found a trading partner for him or something like that.
It's just typical Bulls garbage where stuff is swept under the rug and we don't have legitimate answers. And Nico, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, had an ultimatum that he would never come back if Bobby Portis was still on the team. But he's got no other options. Nobody wants him. His contract's too big. Nobody wants to take on that kind of drama from somebody who was able to make a man go as far as punching him in the face hard enough to break it. I don't want Nico on the team. I don't care how well he's playing now. I just it continues this culture that the Bulls have set up for themselves that, number one, they're fine with mediocrity, and number two, they have no idea what the hell is going on.
And I think that perfectly sums up everything that we've talked about too. Over the course of what, 2 months now since the situation has happened, feels like almost 2 months. And my thing is now looking at just what Mirotić has said over the last couple of days and after these two wins, I think there was a couple quotes I want to read you guys, and I want to get your reaction from this too. And I think it was more of a slight, and it's kind of a change in what Mirotić sounds and like kind of, I'm kind of foreseeing, kind of connecting some dots here. But so he says after these two wins, he said, "I was really excited to play my first game at the United Center this season. I just said to myself, go out there, enjoy playing at home. And it was great. My confidence is high now, especially because I've had the support of my teammates. The first day I was back, nothing coincidental here. I said to assistant coach Randy Brown at the Charlotte game, we are going to win this game. He said, why? And I said, I'm back. We won that game." He also goes on to say, "Today I tell him too, Randy, we are going to be 2-0. He said, "Nico, I trust you." He said, "We are 2-0. There is no coincidence." So he's kind of joking, and somebody had asked him another question like, are you kidding, or is that real? And he goes, no, it's no joke. I'm being very serious." So this has me thinking that Nico is trying to set himself up for another team. So at that January 15th deadline, I feel like this month is important for him in terms of playing, but he's also setting himself up for another opportunity somewhere where he can tell another team, you know what, I've got a lot of confidence. And at this point, I don't really have a whole lot to lose because what are my other options? And so I think the change in tone from Mirotić and over course this month before that deadline, I think you're going to hear a lot of different things that we haven't heard from Mirotić in the past.
I think it's funny. The thing that I would point to first, yeah, okay, Nico led the Bulls with 19 points off the bench in that game, in that win against the Knicks. He went 5 of 8 from downtown. Cool. Nico had himself one of his good Nico games. Welcome back. As far as like where Nico stands, I think you're right, Jordan. He's trying to kind of spin things like, hey, look, we've won a couple of games since I've come back. I was the missing piece on this team, trying to up his value in case what he really does want is a change of scenery, and he's trying to increase his trade value by playing well, and he's trying to point to that anytime he can. That's fine. But from the Bulls fan perspective, and I feel like, Shane, this is kind of what you were saying with like, hey, look, I don't care about the other stuff. I don't care what he does on the floor. I don't want him. All you have to do is look at the replies to that tweet that the Chicago Bulls official Twitter account tweeted out Friday afternoon as Nico was getting ready to make his comeback in that game against Charlotte. It was like some fancy airbrushed photoshopped picture of Nico looking all pensive holding a basketball and like, you know, welcome back 44. And 98% of the hundreds of replies from Bulls fans under that tweet were all some combination of, hey, like, remember that time he got punched in the face? That was hilarious. Or, I don't care. This is hype for no reason because no one wants him back. Nobody wants him on the team. It was so negative. It was the Bulls PR team trying to be like, hey, look, Nico's back. And their entire fan base just said, either we don't care or we don't like him. That was the response they got.
They think that Bulls fans are stupid. They think that Bulls fans don't understand what's going on here. Like, we know as a collective that they have absolutely no idea what they're doing. There are rumors upon rumors swirling about a Gar contract extension, and then Gar coming out and saying, I've got no idea about that, and then somebody else saying a source says Gar has everything there is to know about that, and they just think we're so dumb, and they think that they can pass over this schoolyard bullshit and think that we're going to believe everything that they're telling us. I go with Jordan's comments.
Shane, to that point, I want to ask you, since you're on the biggest radio station here in Chicago in sports radio, so you get calls, you get messages, you guys get texts, emails, whatever it has. I want to know what are people saying in terms of like from the, everywhere from the regular Bulls fan to somebody who's a diehard who watches every single night, what's kind of been the message from all of these and sort of the theme from all of these fans that do want to call in and talk about it? I know it's probably not a big priority right now considering how bad the Bulls are, but I'm sure people are still locked in, still want people to talk about this. So what's the overall consensus of like the calls and the texts and the messages you guys are getting?
So the response that Matt read to that tweet is a pretty good representation of the same stuff that we hear. So there is the occasional optimistic Bulls fan after a good marketing performance, after a good done performance, after the release a couple days ago that LaVine was added to the Windy City Bulls roster, but then changed it really quick and said, oh wait, no, he's coming back because he's not going to play D-League or whatever the hell happened there. There is some optimism, but it's much, much more pessimism, in kind of echoing the things that I've been saying where they think that the Bulls think that they're stupid. Nobody wants this. Like, they don't want this drama. They would prefer to get rid of the players that can give you the best opportunity to win so they don't win many games and have a higher chance for a draft pick. And I don't always necessarily believe in the tanking logic. You don't want to instill a losing culture now and assume that instilling that losing culture is going to pay off and reward with a winning culture by getting a higher draft pick. I don't always necessarily believe in that, but that's what Bulls fans want now, and they definitely don't want all this dramatic garbage that's been happening.
All right, changing gears here real quick. So just kind of looking around basketball in a sense of now that we're talking about drafts, potential prospects. This is somebody that I like to bring up just for pure factor and for fun factor because I know Matt isn't particularly fond of the Ball family. So there's more Ball family news today, or I should say rather over the course of the last week. LiAngelo Ball left UCLA, so that was the big news out of there, and now it's come out that him and LaMelo Ball will be tag teaming. They signed an agent, tag teaming somewhere overseas to try and play together. So LaMelo Ball being 15, probably just about to turn 16 sometime soon here, what are your guys' initial reactions? Like, LaMelo Ball not now giving up his NCAA eligibility to play there, to go overseas and try to enhance his professional career and ultimately make it to the NBA. And same with LiAngelo after everything's happened with the whole burglary in China to the suspension from UCLA. What do you guys take of this, this whole story?
All right, so before the two younger brothers were pulled from before LiAngelo was pulled from UCLA and before made the announcement that LaMelo will not be going to UCLA, I was very much Team LeVar in terms of his abilities as a father, because yes, this man is outspoken. Yes, this man gets himself into some trouble and he knows how to stir the media, but you cannot tell me that there are many other fathers that have done a good enough job to make sure their children will, number one, be millionaires, and number two, get an education from an institution like UCLA. Before this garbage of pulling them out of college, high school, at Chino Hills, and moving them overseas so they can get in and then get out and get to the NBA, before that, I was very much Team LeVar. Now, man, it's turned into LeVar trying to save his public image and not wanting to be it from whatever there's left to save it from, not wanting to look like an idiot by Trump or whatever the hell that garbage was with Jake Tapper on CNN. It's an absolute cluster and it's messy, and I don't really know what to think. I was in terms of like the NBA's partnership with the NCAA and, you know, how kids have to go to at least 1 year of college now, and we saw some instances where kids would just go straight from high school to overseas and then try to get into the NBA from there so they could make their money for their family. I can't remember who did that, whose mom was sick. You know what I'm talking about? That kid whose mom was sick? Doesn't matter. You know what story I'm talking about. So in instances like that, I was cool with kids skipping college and then going make their money overseas and then try to make their way back to the NBA. But this is just a little bit different. You had your kids set up to all three have a UCLA education and still have a pretty good chance at making the NBA. Besides LiAngelo, he just kind of sucks. He's not going to go to the NBA anyway. I'm a little thrown here. And Jordan, you said Matt does not like LeVar Ball at all. I want to hear that.
Yeah, he's on anti-LeVar Ball.
I am not a fan of the entire Ball family. Look, I mean, Lonzo has been an interesting story because the NBA is always better, in my opinion, when the Lakers are relevant. And despite his early season struggles, like, we're talking otherworldly poor shooting from Lonzo Ball. He is showing his skills as a distributor, as a guy who can be an engine to drive a certain kind of offense. And hopefully, whatever other pieces the Lakers end up building around him, they make the Lakers relevant again. Because that, in my opinion, the league does better and is more watchable when the Lakers, you know, one of the big market, the top three market teams, are relevant. But as far as like the latest developments with the Ball family and LeVar taking LiAngelo and LaMelo out of UCLA, first of all, Shane, I think you're overvaluing what it means to be a college basketball player at UCLA. Okay. As far as the education you're getting. That's something that Jordan and I have also talked about on this show before when it comes to, you know, whether you are pro or anti letting kids come into the NBA without a year of college ball first. But look, I don't think that LiAngelo or LaMelo were going to get some glorified, wonderful education by playing ball at UCLA. No, they were going to take joke classes and they were going to play basketball. That's what they were going to do. As far as LiAngelo, the story about, you know, burglary in China or whatever, it's hilarious, but I'm pretty sure we all agree he's not a basketball player who's going to play in the NBA ever.
No.
He's not good enough. And I think when it comes to the youngest LaMelo, there's this kind of sentiment that he might be like the next generation Steph Curry with his, you know, ability and love for shooting the long ball. Who knows? I mean, he's 16 years old. I think it's way too early to tell if he's going to be relevant. But honestly, if he takes those two and they just go play their entire careers overseas instead of clogging up my NBA newsfeed because they are a part of the NBA in any capacity, I would be happy. I hope Lonzo does well for the sake of the Lakers franchise, but other than that, I could give two shits about the Ball family.
This is what I'll say about them. So with everything that's happened over the course of, 18 months since this has really been a big conversation, since LeVar came into the media, it's really a big conversation. Looking at in terms of what he has done for his sons, I applaud him because very few people can do that and get them to the millions like we were all talking about. In terms of like what LiAngelo and what LaMelo are doing now going overseas, I think it's another marketing move from LeVar. First and foremost, he got everything he needed out of the NCAA in terms of with Lonzo, and he knew that LaMelo and LiAngelo, you know, they're not going to be at their peak like Lonzo was. So in that factor, he's going to go say, okay, maybe these two are good enough to go play overseas internationally. You know, international ball has the reputation of not being as good as the NBA. Fair. So they go overseas. They're going to play together now, which they played in high school together, and they did quite well together. I'm very interested to see how a 16-year-old is going to translate to professional ball instead of playing up against 15 and 16 through 18-year-olds at the high school level. I think it's interesting from a basketball standpoint in terms of future of where these guys, where prospects decide to go and kind of opening their mind to other things besides the NCAA. Because realistically, if in short term, the NCAA is a joke for not paying their players. So in that term, a lot of players are starting to think of that. I look at the guy that's playing for Kentucky right now, Kevin Knox. He was offered $1.2 million to play one season in China, and then he was allowed to go to the NBA. He denied that to go play the NCAA ball. But there are contracts, there are situations out there where guys can turn into instant millionaires. And we've seen it with guys that have come over to the NBA now, Terrence Ferguson being one who went and played in Australia for a year, made his money, came to the NBA, and now wants to be a stud here. He passed up an opportunity to play at Arizona. I think in terms of putting a target on Lonzo's back with the Lakers, the way he did with the NBA, I think he's doing the same with LiAngelo and LaMelo going overseas. I saw a lot of international players now start to tweet out, you know, their reaction to this and coming over, and they're saying, you know, they think this is a joke, but the talent level here is a lot better than they think it is. I think there's going to be a target on their back overseas, but I think it's trying to open a new avenue for young players and in their situation, where they can go and how they can make the most out of their talent. And for some of these guys, for guys like LiAngelo Ball, if he's never going to play in the NBA, this might be his opportunity to make that money. You know, he's not going to make money like Lonzo did. He might not make money like LaMelo.
Why do we care about the ball kids making money? Why would anyone care about that?
It's not about LaMelo or Lonzo or LiAngelo making the money. It's in terms of like future prospects and making this turn and looking at, hey, you know what? Maybe if my talents are good enough, maybe I'll go overseas too instead of playing in the NCAA, make my money, come over to the NBA. Like, it's just opening new avenues. And I think new avenues for younger and younger players. Like, we've never seen a 16-year-old go over to Europe and try to play professionally at the level, because like, look at his prospect ranking right now. 2019, he's in the top five prospects. He'd go to any college he wants. He's committed to UCLA. Like, in terms of other prospects, not just focusing on LaMelo and LiAngelo, I think this is going to open up a new avenue. And I may be wrong again. I thought with Terrence Ferguson doing the same thing and going in the first round, that was going to open an avenue. I think it's just going to be slower, but there is. They're like, LeVar is trying to carve out this new avenue for other players, and I think it's interesting to at least talk about in terms of basketball value. You can think whatever you want about the Ball family, but I think it's interesting in terms of avenues for other players and for future prospects.
I agree. It's interesting in that respect. I also wonder about the mental health of this poor 16-year-old who, instead of finishing high school and going maybe at least as a, you know, as a college athlete playing a one-and-done year, he's going to go like move overseas and live in Europe somewhere where he's playing professional ball with a bunch of people he doesn't know, probably won't speak the same language. I mean, really, really excellent fathering there, LaVar Ball. Good for you. You're going to make your kids a bunch of money, but who knows what the hell kind of brains they'll wind up with at the end of their lives.
You know what, Matt? You are a hater.
You are a hater.
I am.
Isn't that what LaVar says?
Am.
You are a hater.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe he can tell me to stay in my lane someday, and then I will tell him why, all of the reasons why I do not care for his...
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, he's an idiot. The sandals are comfortable, though.
Oh, did you buy a pair of those?
Maybe I need to try a pair of sandals.
No, you guys know where I work. I don't make $180 sandals money, but one of my friends got a promo pair for something I put him on last week, and my Lord, it's like you're walking on clouds. Wow.
I mean, I'm a Birkenstocks guy. I don't know.
Birkenstocks.
I don't believe that they can be more comfortable than a well broken in pair of Birks.
That's probably true. But that's what, like a $90, $120 pair of sandals?
Hey, so as we wrap up here, let's quickly touch on the Celtics tonight. So Celtics Bulls at home. The Celtics are playing without Kyrie Irving, possibly without Al Horford tonight. No Gordon Hayward, obviously. So this might be kind of an interesting matchup to watch. In terms of record-wise, the Celtics have the best record in the NBA, the Bulls being the worst. Coming off these two wins, maybe the Bulls being on a little bit of a high, this will at least be a game where we can tune into. And honestly, I'm going to tune in to watch Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, because those two guys, man did the Celtics luck out, because those two guys look like elite players under Brad Stevens' system. Like, those two guys are going to be fun to watch for a very, very long time. So what do you guys think about this matchup tonight?
Yeah, it'll be tough to keep Jason Tatum in check. Not only does he absolutely look like the crazy young athlete freak that people were falling in love with in the draft, but go figure, he leads the NBA in three-point shooting right now. I don't think anybody saw that coming. So the Bulls will have their hands full with him, but you mentioned Horford might not play, no Kyrie. Those two have had a very successful two-man game this season. Actually, if you want to talk about underappreciated players in the NBA right now, perhaps none more so than Al Horford. He actually ranks seventh among all NBA players in real plus minus entering this week. He's second among power forwards, trailing only Draymond Green. Better than Antetokounmpo, better than Anthony Davis. And he's also, I mean, not only is he doing scoring well when he's playing the two-man game with Kyrie, but he's been facilitating the ball well as in addition to that. Here's a fun stat. Celtics 10-0 when Horford has six or more assists thus far this season. So it could give the Bulls a little bit of a window to at least stay competitive in this game if, in fact, Horford and Kyrie are both out. We're also, I'm pretty sure at this point, we're positive no Marcus Morris either. So, you know, perhaps the Bulls catch a break here and can stay in this one, but I still think that the Celtics are a better overall team. I think the Bulls' win streak ends at two. What about you, Shane?
Nobody holds teams to fewer points, and the Celtics, I believe, efficiently, they are the number one defensive team in the NBA, correct? And I also think that the Bulls score, it's either the fewest or the second fewest points in the NBA, which is probably, yeah, fewest. It's obviously a major recipe for disaster, even without Kyrie and even with a questionable Al Horford. But I think this is probably one of those that's going to keep us entertained through like halfway through the third quarter, and then somebody's going to throw up a bad shot, and Jerian Grant is going to have like a 7-minute stretch where he misses 8 or 9 shots and thinks he's back at Notre Dame running for a Final Four. But
if Jerian Grant is even taking 9 shots, I don't want any part of that.
Well, don't tell Jerian Grant that, because he will absolutely take 9 shots and you won't stop him. Yeah, I think this is going to keep us entertained through the third quarter, just because the Celtics are tired. They were in Detroit yesterday, second game off of back-to-back. Bulls at least had one day off in between their back-to-back. So, yeah, through the third quarter, we'll be entertained, and then the Celtics run away with it in the fourth.
Yeah, I debated on whether or not to go to this game as a fan tonight, but I'm going to save that maybe for sometime next week. I know the 76ers are in town too, so maybe I'll get my first taste to see Joel Embiid live. But I think you guys are right. The more interesting thing in terms of the Bulls tonight, I'm wondering if Fred Hoiberg decides to go small ball here in terms of finding a way to rotate in not only Nico and Markkanen together, or not only Nico and Bobby together, but Nico and maybe Markkanen playing together, maybe Portis and Markkanen playing together at the same time. Seeing kind of the front court go maybe a little bit smaller to kind of open up things to maybe run it a little bit quicker than we might see. And that, I think that'll hinge a little bit more on whether Al Horford plays or not tonight. But certainly interesting. And I would like to see what happens with those rotations and see kind of what happens with them. But also too, kind of keeping tabs on David Nwaba a little bit too, because David Nwaba, since he's come back from that injury, has been that spark that the Bulls have desperately needed in that second unit coming off the bench. And he's also been a key factor in maybe some of these closeout games. And that's something we didn't touch on, but he's been kind of closing out games for the Bulls late. And we saw he could arguably have been the difference maker here against the Knicks and against the Hornets in those wins. So all of those factors, I think I'm going to keep an eye on too as well. But I'm more excited to see maybe if Fred plays around a little bit more with letting Mirotić, Portis, and marketing kind of fill in those roles, and see if the team tries to go small ball and tries to play a little bit more to the shooting realm of the game. But certainly it will be entertaining and interesting.
Real quick, Shane, before we let you go, where can our Locked On Bulls followers follow you on Twitter?
If you hate social media that much and want to ruin your timeline, you can follow me at Shane_Riordan, RIORDAN. Same thing on Instagram, but no underscore. I'm a little bit more fun on Instagram than I am on Twitter. You'll probably just hate me more on Instagram, but you know, whatever. I don't really care anymore. I've built up a reputation of having bad content, and I'm just going to roll with it.
I appreciate you doubling down on that. That's very respectable.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We want to thank our guest, Shane Riordan from 670 The Score, for joining us in this Bulls conversation today on Monday. So, but you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Locked On Bulls, and at Bulls _ Peck on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Dash Radio tomorrow morning, dashradio.com and the Dash Radio app. We're there 3 times a week. That's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. If you missed any part of this episode, you're up early in the morning, check us out on Dash Radio. And if you like basketball, it's 24/7, 365 of no commercials, all basketball content on the Nothing But Net channel. But for Jordan and Matt, and for our guest Shane Riordan, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. Enjoy the Celtics game tonight. We'll see you tomorrow.